Support for WVIK comes from Quad City Bank and Trust, with 5 Quad City locations, providing consumer and commercial banking as well as trust and asset management. More information at qcbt.bank.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, whatever time of day you're listening. This is Ben Gujan with Quad City Arts, and welcome back to Talking Art, supported by Quad City Bank and Trust. And today I always say I'm excited to talk to our guests, but today I'm extra thrilled because, as you know, if you are a regular listener, when we have theater guests on, I kind of have my inner theater geek come out. So I am extra thrilled to be talking with directors of two of Genesius Guild's summer shows, Kate Bodenbender and Michael Callahan. Welcome, Kate and Michael. Welcome to Talking Art.
Thank you. Thank you for having us.
Yeah, thank you for having us.
I'm thrilled to have you today. And, you know, I'm a fairly recent transplant to the Quad Cities. I moved here in 2019. Mm-hmm. And so when I saw that there was an outdoor Shakespeare and Greek drama in the park, I was so excited to see that and have been, you know, seen several productions over the years. So I'm thrilled to be able to talk to you. And you guys have both been involved with Genesius Guild for a really long time.
Yeah. So, yeah. Michael's tenure extends much further than mine, I think.
A little bit further back, yeah. I mean, I lived only about 6 or 7 blocks from the park.
Yeah.
And so starting when I was about 10 years old, my father would take us over, and I think my first show was HMS Pinafore, Gilbert and Sullivan.
Oh, fun.
In around 1980. Would have been the first show I saw at the park. And then I've been continuously going over there since then. I think a couple years, 1 year I was out in West Virginia for the summer. Mm-hmm. And another year, again, I had an internship somewhere. And
sure.
Was unable to attend, but mostly have been there ever since. My first show on the stage would have been around 91 or so.
Wow.
When I was in the Magic Flute as part of the what was then the Mozart Festival.
Okay.
And decided, well, since I'm in the opera already, I should go over and audition for the plays.
Yeah.
As well. And kind of my first play was an emergency throw-in. The director, Patty Flaherty, called me up with about a week before the opening of Twelfth Night and said, well, we have a problem, usual problem at Genesius Guild. Somebody got a job. And therefore, good time would I be Sir Andrew Aguecheek? And I was about, you know, 21, 22, and that foolishness of youth going, yeah, sure, I can do this in a week.
Well, why, what a great role, too.
Yeah, it's a wonderful role. Yeah. And since then, I've been hooked. Came on the stage, Mike Miller, a wonderful supporter of Genesius Guild, wonderful actor out there, just grabbed me when I came on at first rehearsal and said, we're your friends now, and this is your home, and everybody's your best friend, and we're going to get you through this no matter what, so don't you worry a minute. I don't think I have since.
And I have to say, like, I've been an emergency put in many times in my mm-hmm. career, and I have always found it to be such a wonderful experience because the cast is so supportive.
Yes.
Like, everyone is so supportive, and you get a little bit of grace, and you just, I did a show a couple of years ago as a production of Christmas Carol that I had been in before, but they had a COVID emergency.
Mm-hmm.
And they called me like on a Tuesday, and they were like, can you be down here? And this was in Missouri for a 2 o'clock matinee tomorrow, doing 3 roles I had never done before. And so I drove down and crammed lines on the whole trip. And I got there an hour and a half before. They took me through wardrobe, walked me through the blocking. That was like, okay, let's do the show. And it's so fun.
It is. Yeah.
So those are great adventures. Well, how did you get involved, Kate?
My family moved when I was in, I think, 4th grade, which
yeah.
was, I don't know if I want to say the date, a long time ago. And we moved about a block and a half from the park. And so that first summer that we lived here, which was 85. So mm-hmm. we started going up to the park.
Okay. And just to interject for our listeners that don't know, we're talking about Lincoln Park.
Yeah. Yes.
Right near Augustana's campus.
Yes.
Right.
The beautiful Lincoln Park.
Yeah, it really is gorgeous. Yeah. And that stage is beautiful. But yes. Continue.
Yeah. So we started going up there every summer to see the shows, which led to some interesting things about what I thought everyone knew. Like, I thought everyone in the world knew who Agamemnon was.
Sure.
Because, like, doesn't everybody know that?
Doesn't everybody know?
It's very surprising when that turned out not to be the case. But I was actually quite intimidated by the quality of the shows mm-hmm. that they put on up there. And I wasn't brave enough to audition until I had gone away to college, had a career in opera, mm-hmm. and then moved back home. So I was like 26 or so. And it was like 2001 was the first time I was in a show. 2002, something like that.
Well, and that makes so much sense, you know, that you have an opera background. Because mm-hmm. there is inherent drama and presentiveness of both outdoor theater. Mm-hmm. Like,
yes.
Outdoor theater is a whole different ballgame than doing a show in an intimate black box. You know, and there is a size that is required of the actor and just what you're doing that you need to carry throughout the park.
Yes, it is. Most of my directorial experience has been in very small venues, sometimes with the audience very close, a foot from the actors, right in people's laps, sometimes literally. I think only once, but this has been a very different ballgame.
Yeah,
it's been really interesting. The kind of adjustments I had to make as a director and ask actors to make if they've mostly worked with me in those smaller venues.
Yeah.
And I have been pulling on that experience, that long ago experience of being an opera singer. I think the Greeks require it no matter where they are because you have to be able to sustain this emotion over many lines or over, you know, a single line that keeps going and you can't let go of it. You have to keep feeding it, otherwise it falls flat. So I think that the Greeks always require that kind of thing.
Well, and especially, and I will say, I have not seen a Genesius Greek production. I've only seen some of the Shakespeare. But I've directed Greek mm-hmm. in Masque before, and Genesius does its mm-hmm. Greek in Masque. And there is, like, that adds another layer of size you need to bring to the performance.
Yes. Yeah.
Because you don't have that immediacy of the actor's face and emotions, mm-hmm. like, you've got to physicalize that and just send it.
Yes, and it's all in the voice then.
Yeah.
Which, thank goodness for the masks in that case, because you can do whatever you need to with your face
right.
to produce the sound that you want, the correct pathos for that moment. So.
Yeah. Well, how did you get in? Because you've both directed several shows at Genesius.
Mm-hmm. This is This is the first time I'm directing at Genesius.
Oh,
that's
insane.
Exciting. Yes.
How did you get involved in directing in general? I know, you know, a lot of us start as actors and then move into it. But how did you move from Sir Andrew Aguecheek to?
It was sort of a leap of faith. I think I'd started. I also had sort of a music side, opera side career, and then was in a church music directing a lot and did some of that. And since I was directing there, I kind of picked up the flow of directing. I thought, well, I love theater and I've done a lot of straight acting and I dearly love the Greeks. I think that first year they did Oedipus Rex.
Yeah.
And I think that just transfixed me on so many levels. And unfortunately, like Kate too, it was the same thing where doesn't everybody know the plot of Oedipus Rex? Yeah. Do we not? Do other kids have no idea about this? Okay. But that, then I decided, well, if there's one thing I'd like to try, it'd be a Greek play. And I did Prometheus of Bound. And it was so much fun. It was so similar to some of the stuff, because once I became a director, one of the things I learned is you're just making about 100 decisions. About 80 of them probably doesn't really matter what you're doing, and about maybe 20 of them have some bearing, and you know, one or two are really important.
Yeah.
And so I figured I could do that with a play and did Prometheus. And it was just a lot of fun, and especially exploring those Greek plays, which I think are very similar. I mean, it's where opera came from, yes. Right? Opera came from that Greek, that sort of, like you said, extending out the line, as it were. There's almost their speeches. When I did Antigone this year, was working with high schoolers, I talked about how the speeches are very much like an aria, and to think of them like an aria, where your pitch goes up at certain points, where you're going to hold out maybe certain words, certain ideas, certain concepts, and then others will drop down, and you want to find the moment, where's the high C in this speech? Where right. is the treasure, the moment that is most important out of, say, this three-paragraph speech you're going to hold? And I just, again, I've loved the Greeks ever since, starting with that and seeing how musical they are. And again, that tragedy, which I dearly love. One of my favorite bits dealing with tragedy has to do with everybody's trying to do the right thing, and they just kind of miss each other.
Yeah.
Or you come so close to solving a problem, and then they just go right by each other because of some small misunderstanding that is just hugely blown out of proportion.
Yeah. Or those, you know, famous, like, tragic flaws of pride and hubris and all those things where they're just blinded to the thing that's right there, by something, by being a person.
Right.
My life. Oedipus last year, and the part that I dearly loved was the shepherd who shows up at the end.
Yes.
And had Don O'Shea as my actor, because I want a good actor and somebody who could go right in there with it. And he said, well, I'll do a smaller part for you. I can't do bigger parts anymore.
Sure.
And I said, yeah, I need this one to be strong, because I love the moment where he says, I thought I was doing the right thing.
Yeah.
That there's a baby alone down on a mountain. I went and saved it. I thought that's what you're supposed to do. And not only is that interesting from its place in that story, but it throws into light, I think, that's brought up somewhat in Antigone as well, is things we do that we think are right, and maybe even are right in the moment, and that you do make the right move, that the world is sort of so complicated and so built up that even by doing the right thing, you can bring tragedy closer.
Yeah.
And I find that such a fascinating idea.
Yeah, it really is. And there is just so much richness in the Greeks. And, you know, I too, like, from a young age, Greek mythology always fascinated me. And then I studied Latin in high school. And so we did just a lot of general classics works in there. And those stories are so timeless and universal, even, you know, they're taking place thousands of years ago. You know, there's so much that we can relate to and you know, they are important stories that still need to be told. So it thrills me that Genesius Guild still tells them.
Yeah. That's pretty cool.
How did you transition into directing? Because you also were with Prenzi Players.
Yes,
right?
I'm one of the co-founders of Prenzi Players and the founding cast. So we were, Prenzi Players is in many ways a direct outgrowth of Genesius Guild. We wanted to do Shakespeare inside and not just in the summer. We just wanted more.
Yeah.
there was no intent to compete, because how could we? So we were doing something very different, and that's where I started directing. I was like, we have all these ideas. They wouldn't work on the stage this big. What if we were to, like, find a place, like, just a black box, a small place to do a show? And everyone's like, oh, that's a good idea. That's a good idea. And it took a little while before someone, J.C. Luxton, was like, you know what? You find a place, I'll cut the script and direct.
Yeah.
And then we were off to the races. And the second show that Prenzi did was Hamlet, which was the first show I ever directed. So you and I,
right,
we're doing Prometheus Bound and Hamlet.
Yeah.
Fearless, I guess, or foolish,
just
one or the
right
other.
In. Yeah. Right. Yeah.
Sometimes they're the same.
Yes. And so I've directed, I don't know, I've been part of the production of 34 of 38 of Shakespeare's plays in one way or another. Yeah.
That's
incredible. Collecting them all like Pokemon. but I didn't know that I would ever direct out at Genesius Guild. I wasn't sure I was up to the challenge.
Sure.
And then Misha Hooker, who has played with Frenzy and is on the artistic council, was like, hey, would you think about coming out and doing Taming? And I was like, oh, I will think about that.
Yeah.
And thinking about it led to me actually doing it. Yeah. So.
Well, that leads us right into Taming of the Shrew, which opened last weekend.
Yes,
and you've got 1 weekend left this weekend. So you are doing something, I'm not going to say original, because it is original. It is original.
Yes.
But you've got a unique spin compared to most contemporary productions of the Taming of the Shrew. Tell us about that.
Yeah. So when I was thinking about whether or not I could direct Taming of the Shrew, I found that I was having a hard time imagining how I would put that show up on the Genesius Guild stage.
Sure.
Just because the size of the stage, the size of the acting that needs to happen there, and the audience that it draws.
Yeah.
It's very young people, older people, anybody, people walking through the park. It's no, they're not someone who's like, I love Shakespeare and I know it intimately and I want to go sit in a small box with 12 actors for 3 hours to experience that in my face. That's not what Genesius Guild is. What Genesius Guild is wonderful.
Yeah.
And very challenging. That's not where you, all of the tamings I could imagine were in like a smaller venue.
Sure.
Largely because of the kind of the, I guess, controversial. I want to say controversial.
It's problematic.
It's problematic. Yeah. It is. And yeah, it's hilariously funny.
Yes.
It's such a funny show. Probably the funniest show I've ever directed, just in terms of what the script is giving you. And then there's the domestic abuse.
Right.
Honestly. And it's for a modern audience, that it's so shocking if you think about what's actually happening. And I can't not think about what's actually happening.
Yeah.
In part because any production of Taming of the Shrew, there is absolutely no chance that there isn't a woman in the audience who hasn't experienced that. There's going to be at least one.
Yeah.
And how can you laugh at that? Which is what would have originally happened. It was a joke. It was all very funny. And it's not funny.
No.
It's not funny. So in a smaller space that could get played, I could think of a couple ways to play it in a smaller space. Out on the Genesius Guild stage, with kids walking up to watch, I'd be like, how will I do it? How can I restore, how can it be funny and stay funny? I decided that the way to do that would be to cast it the way Shakespeare would have, which is with all men.
Yeah.
Yep. So there's that, it's a purposeful kind of separation, and a separation that the original audiences would have had, that is not a woman experiencing that, not even pretending to experience that.
Right.
That's a man pretending to be a woman, pretending to experience those things. And it allows a little bit more separation, and it allows the satire in it to work better as it would have originally. So that was my original, that was the reason why I came up with that idea.
Yeah.
And as we've worked on it, it's been interesting to watch this cast of all male identifying individuals interact with those harder moments in the script.
Yeah.
And they are not less horrified by it than women would be. And unwilling to look away from it. Like, the funny is funny. It's a very funny show, I think.
Yeah.
But there are moments that are very real. And if I had even suggested that we play something that was on the borderline as something that was funny, they were like, no, that's not funny. This part has to be real. So that's been, it's worked out, I think.
I think it's just a lovely idea, because I know there's so many, you know, modern productions of it that have to grapple with that issue. And I can't wait to see it, because it sounds like it's just a really great way to,
I think so. I'm a little biased
to hold that up. And, you know, like you said, comedy is such a way for us to look at social issues.
Yes.
Like, because it forces you to laugh and then ask, why did I laugh at that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What's funny about that?
Yes. You're laughing and laughing and laughing. And wait a minute.
So, Well, that's exciting. Anything else about the show that your actors that you're excited about?
They're all doing a fantastic job. We have a last minute entry. We have someone who was no longer able to be in the show. We found out the weekend, the Sunday before we opened. So we had somebody come in, and he's doing a great job. He learned his lines right quick. And yeah. So that's pretty cool. Ben's doing a great job. And I really feel very proud of there. We have a couple people on stage who've never really done Shakespeare, or at least not done Shakespeare at kind of the size of role that they have.
Sure.
And they're just eating it up. They're doing a great job. Jonah Higginbottom is playing Lucentio, and his experience is mostly musical theater.
Yeah.
With microphones indoors, obviously.
Sure.
And he played Sir Nathaniel, the curate, in Love's Labour's Lost. And I cast him as Lucentio, and he was like, I'm a little nervous. I've never done anything this big. And certainly not with Shakespeare before. And I was like, you got it. And he did. He does have it, actually. That's I was awesome. Right about that. Yeah. So it's pretty cool.
Well, and that's one thing, you know, I've picked up from both of you here is that Genesius Guild is very open. Like, you've never done theater? Come on down. Yep. We got you.
There is literally a play, you mentioned Agamemnon earlier, where I think Wooten was directing the play, and he needed an Agamemnon, and saw somebody on their bike, stopped, watched the play for a little bit, and Don Wooten walked over to him and was like, hey, you won't play Agamemnon?
I've never heard that story. That's amazing.
This is true. He was around for, he made it more than one season even, but he did. He wound up playing Agamemnon from somebody walking through the park.
That's great.
Yeah.
I love it.
Well, that's great. You know, I mean, we talk about, and Genesius Guild is always free.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
mm-hmm.
Anyone can come, and, you know, we talk a lot about accessibility in the arts, right. You know, and I think we usually look at that from an audience perspective, but you guys are doing that also with a participant perspective.
My favorite audience is when you're on a Wednesday night or Thursday night of Tech Week doing the show, and you turn around and all of a sudden you see about 10 people in the park have stopped dead and have started watching up on stage.
That's
and
really cool.
It's just like, and then those are the people.
Sometimes someone wanders over and goes, what is this?
Yeah.
What is this? Is this a rehearsal? Or is this, you go, yes, it is. That's what we're doing. Come this weekend. It's 7 o'clock.
Well, and that's great, too, that you're, you know, getting... Do you do all the rehearsals on the outdoor stage, or do you guys start inside and then move?
No.
Inside happens maybe if there's rain.
Sure.
maybe if there's rain, we do something inside.
We'll go to the band shell.
Yes, the band shell.
Go to the band shell. It was funny because I think one time when I was doing Antigone rehearsal this year, I'm like saying, who's shouting way over at the other end of the park? I mean, it's just really difficult for us. Oh, that's right. Taming's practicing over there.
Someone shouting. You know, yelling.
Yeah. You're like, or the Chord Buster. I also direct the Chord Busters, and Genesius Guild has lent us the stage for the past couple of years on the July 4th weekend. And I sent a message over to them. I said, it's great your practice. I understand Taming's coming up, but could you quiet it down right around 7 when we start to sing?
We did. We kept looking at our phones. Everybody's looking at their phone. 7 o'clock game, and everyone started doing their lines like this.
You'll drown us out in a second.
Yeah.
So tell us, Taming of the Shrew runs through July 19th.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. And all the shows are at 7 o'clock.
Yes.
And then your show opens, Michael.
We have Women's Festival, another 2,500-year-old play. And we even make a couple of different references to it. Don Wooten actually rewrote most of these plays.
Mm-hmm.
Those plays, oddly enough, are becoming somewhat dated in their own way. So even trying to update those has become somewhat of a trial. I looked at this one, and there's a lot of cross-dressing and other jokes that I don't believe would fit into a 2026 sort of safe space type of theater.
Yeah.
And so I've been working on rewriting that. Again, not knowing sort of what kind of... The comedy's kind of last minute, so I don't even know what kind of cast I'm going to have.
Right.
I think I found out last night that I think I have enough people to cover what I want to have covered and the way I've written the play. And this year I'm going to approach it a little differently as well. I want to rehearse some of the scenes. I want the actors to give me ideas. I want it to sort of be, you know, sort of a group together thing. We'll figure out how this comedy is going to work. We're going to have a special type of chase at the end of the play. It's always ended with a chase. I don't know if you've been to a comedy.
No.
Probably the most traditional thing it wound up being. We do Shakespeare. We do the Greeks. But the most traditional thing has turned out to be the end of the year comedy where certain things could not be violated.
Yes,
right. And like it has to end with a chase.
Oh, fine.
Well, this year we kind of modify the chase a little bit. And there'll be maybe some puppets that do a lot of the chase to stand in for the actors. And then we'll have a couple other little things that we're updating, I think, this year specifically. But as always, we're going to make fun of the way the Greeks did it. They made fun of their politicians. They made fun of their society. We're going to make fun of a few politicians. We tend to try and focus on local. We skewer equal, both sides very well. I was so happy that some things I wrote have only gotten better as time went on. And there are things that are referred to. I'm like, oh, great, this joke's going to make it. This joke will make it. There's just a reference this week in the news. Great, we have it. It's going to be set up
for nowadays. Your Genesius skills on Tiresias.
Well, and Tiresias will make an appearance and have some predictions for the Quad Cities. So be sure to be at the comedy, the Women's Festival, to hear what the future holds for the Quad Cities.
Well, and that's running July 25th through August 2nd?
Yes.
Correct?
Yes, both those weekends. I get to see the opening night. I originally had a gig. That gig has been pushed off, so I get to see opening night. I didn't think I was going to. And then I go away to Denver for a week, and then I'll be back to see closing night. So hopefully all chaos doesn't descend in between.
I think the staff will keep it together. Our stage manager, Liz Sager, she'll keep it together.
She'll keep it together, and I have a wonderful assistant director.
Yes.
Elena, who's been directing a couple of the Shakespeare the last few years, want to act this year and take maybe a step back from doing some of the directing. And I begged, cajoled, pleaded, promised, and I got her as my assistant director for the comedy to cover those moments where I won't be able to be there and work with the cast on developing these jokes. Already, like I said, some of the actors that I've recruited have already contributed their three bits in the comedy that were that my actors have come up with already. So
that's awesome. Well, and I have always found that in directing, I used to very jokingly always say, like, my job as a director is to get you to do what I want you to do, but make you think you came up with it. But in actuality, like, my best directing experiences have all been when it is very collaborative.
Yes.
And, like, you know, I'm never the smartest person in the room, but I surround myself with other smart people. And together we can make something greater than the sum of its parts.
Yeah, there's too much in these plays.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Whether it's the Greek tragedy or the Greek comedy or the Shakespeare, there's too much for one person to notice it all.
Yes.
You know, so you need your whole cast to be part of creating that, you know, one big brain. Together we're a genius.
Exactly.
Everybody on their own, we're fine. We do well enough. But you put us all together, you got something really good.
Yeah. Well, and I think, too, in general, like with verse plays, especially Greek and Shakespeare, like there is too much in there. You no one is ever going to get the references. But when you build the way you approach the text smartly as an actor, like you're hitting those high points, kind of like you said, with hitting those high C's. Mm-hmm. And so that, like, I think some people stress about, like, I'm not understanding everything they're saying or the meaning of everything they're saying. You don't need to.
No.
And you don't need to enjoy it.
And you can't. So we need to make people hear it and understand enough. People need to understand enough, which, and that's really, really important. But it's archaic language.
Yep.
Written in a verse form. Mm-hmm. So, and then often an archaic verse form, and then used metaphorically or idiomatically, or so the layers that are going on there that can keep someone from understanding that specific reference are really enormous. But if the actor knows, they should be able to show you maybe not exactly what they're talking about, but you'll get the idea.
Yeah.
Right. You understand that that's funny. When is it Aguecheek? Andrew Aguecheek, they say his hair is like flax on a distaff.
Yeah.
Like I don't know. Most people don't know what flax on a distaff looks like.
No.
Right. It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter. If the actor has a really clear idea of what that hair looks like and flax on a distaff, and they say it with it in their mind, and, you know, people will know, oh, they're making fun of his hair. Maybe it seems like it's maybe really limp.
Yeah.
And they'll laugh because it's funny.
Yeah.
They don't have to know what a distaff is.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting. I was just thinking about this as we were talking about this. I had directed an immersive show a couple of years ago at the Sound Conservatory, the old Moline Public Library. Mm-hmm. And that, you know, took place over three floors. So we knew that our audience would not see everything because they're following different actors around and different things are happening in different times. But the way we structured it with some repetitions of cycles of things, I was like, okay, people should be able to see about 60% of the show and be able to put things together. Mm. And I was thinking, like, it's really similar sometimes with a Shakespeare show, with the language. Like, you're not going to get everything, but as an audience member, it puts that challenge before. Like, you're not getting spoon-fed everything. Yeah, right. You're like, oh, I got this piece and this piece and this piece, and then I've got to think and put it together and figure out what's happening.
And you can,
which, for me as an audience member, is really exciting.
Yes, more fun. It's more fun when you have to be part of making the show.
Yeah,
I agree. And in Shakespeare, some of the plot points get discussed by characters multiple times.
Yes.
That's because somebody missed it the first time. So here's another one. And just in case, here it is a third time. This is what's happening, what's going to happen, right? They're in there for a reason.
Well, yeah. And I mean, that writing is so smart. And Shakespeare knew who he was writing to at the Globe when you've got the groundlings down there and the people in the boxes. And it's like, you know, those audiences were not our, we're going to sit in the dark and politely watch the play audiences. No. It was a much rowdier audience. So you had to have those multiple references to plot points, which I read somewhere recently that Netflix in their creation of series now has told writers and directors, like, you guys need to reiterate the plot points more because your audience is sitting on their couch scrolling their phone while they're watching your show. Mm. And it's, you know, I mean, very different attention focuses, but
yeah, that's not entirely dissimilar from what would be happening in an Elizabethan theater.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, I think we have a great ability at Genesius Guild to sort of bring a corrective, because a lot of people get this in school. They get the Greek in school. They get the Shakespeare in school. And then I think they come out to a Shakespeare show or a Greek show, and they want to get the right answer. Everybody in the culture wants to get the right answer.
Sure.
And so if they don't understand something, they get frustrated, because as if there'll be some sort of test after, because that's how it was originally presented to them. And I think one thing Genesius Guild is great at, especially because we are a free theater, you come opening night, you don't get something in the Shakespeare play. Well, come back. Come back another night and sit and watch it and see if you pick up something else from it, or go home and look up. And that this isn't also, I think we've found that doing research and stuff has always been presented as a chore, and not as why it's fun to discover this stuff, to see what was going on in Shakespeare time, why he might have written certain things. I mean, I talk about this a lot in music, but it's the same in a lot of theater, is that there's some pieces where, again, I've been involved with Genesius Guild sort of in different ways for 40 years, and still some of the plays, you'll see something, you're like, oh, I had not. And that's the great thing of we talk about somewhat differences in culture, and people talk about Shakespeare as if it's this a great thing that's sort of up here somewhere. And there is a level of craft to it. But part of the thing is that it can fascinate over 40 years. You see some movies, you see them 10 times because you know everything that happens in that film.
Yeah.
And it's comforting to you, and it's great. And some films I've seen 10 times because I wanted to catch new things and I catch new things in it. And that's the thing with Shakespeare and Greek is that you can come out and be perplexed. That's fine. Let that just go past. You don't understand it. Totally fine. That's not, they're not making fun of you on stage. Nobody's going to ask for a test later on.
No.
Come back again. See what else you pick up and see what these layers are. And I'll tell you, as I age too, it's one of those things, you come back to some of these plays and it's like you're watching something entirely new because life has done certain things with you and you come back and you see totally different things in it. And to me, that's what great culture is. It's not about trying to confuse you or trying to make something that's up here that only certain people will get. It's about having those layers that I can research about it and be fascinated for hours by a play, to have parts of a play perplex me for decades and to come back and see sort of different interpretations on that and what is there. And even these Greeks, when I did Antigone again earlier, the Antigone came out and we worked with high schoolers and the way she presented Antigone, I'm like,
Yes.
I never thought about it that way.
No, in the audience, I had the same experience. I was like, like at first it was
that's
like,
really that's really cool.
Oh, no, actually, I think I like it. Right. Yeah. It was, yeah, it was really cool.
Yeah,
it was
we really went cool. back and forth a few times with my assistant director, and she's like, do you think? I'm saying, I think I'm just going to let this run. I like this viewpoint. They kind of played her kind of bratty. She was unlikable.
Sure.
Yeah. I thought she was unlikable. I'm like, I love the idea that this person you're supposed to sort of, that most people mark as heroic.
As your hero, yeah.
As your hero is kind of unlikable. As kind of annoying with this moral, overwhelming moral sense that she has.
As teenagers,
I mean,
not that I have anything, teenagers. Yeah. Actually, I have two, I have a son who's 14 and a son who's 19, and I've learned so much from my teenagers. So I don't want to, I'm not saying that teenagers don't know what's going on. I think they do know what's going on. They just see it in a very different way.
Yeah.
But it's very often that a teenager with a very clear idea about what they want or what they think is right, they don't have like the social nicety skills yet to kind of convince people gently. And they say the thing and they say it over and over and over again.
Yes.
And that's what Antigone does.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
I mean, she is the hero, but that doesn't mean that she's nice.
Right.
Yeah, and that's what I see a lot, I think, at Genesius Guild. To me, that's the magic of Genesius Guild a lot, is we have some stalwart actors who get to have, you know, fun with a lot of this material and go deep with it. But what's exciting, even having been an actor out there, and especially as a director, is seeing the person the first time go, oh. Mm-hmm. Or realize something, or see something in them that you're like, what you're doing is unique, and I haven't seen this before, and you're adding so much to this, that they heightened the first timer, or the new person is heightening my perception of what the play is, and what the meaning is. And that, I think, is sort of the gold in Genesius Guild, that we take all starters, that we take so many beginning actors and just, again, people who would have never thought of being on the stage possibly and definitely never thought of being in Shakespeare up here, you know.
Right,
exactly. And you bring them on and you're like, here you go. And that is such a wonderful way to experience Shakespeare and to start that lifelong love of I just had Bob Hansky at church. We had a talent night do reading and he did a Falstaff reading. From Henry IV. Yeah. And he's like, food for powder, food for powder. And I'm like, that was one of my dad's favorite sayings. Again, one of those things about a weird childhood, right? My dad, from 4 years old, I knew stretches of Shakespeare because my dad would just recite it all the time. He'd come down the stairs saying, down, down, I come like glistering Phaeton. And it was like, I'm like, oh, I see, that's Richard II. Okay. okay, yeah, and you thought everybody did that. Don't everybody live in households where Shakespeare's quoted?
I make my five-year-old listen to recordings of Waiting for Godot, so we all have our own childhood. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
What's funny is, I was the assistant director for a production of Waiting for Godot that went up at the Black Box. We were just barely out of COVID. It was like,
they performed 6 feet. I remember that. I didn't see it because we weren't ready to go.
Yeah, actors 6 feet apart with masks on. And my older son, who was about 14 at the time, I think, played the boy. Mm-hmm. And having your children quote Waiting for Godot it's very strange because it doesn't sound like they're quoting anything at all.
Yeah.
And only the fact that I know that they've been at Godot rehearsals with me,
sure,
do I know that them saying this very casual phrase that people say all the time has this all these layers behind it.
Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. You know, it was very weird. I'm like that. And Joseph would say something, Jamie would laugh, and I'd be like, that is not actually a funny line, except that, you know, that
knowing the kind,
the specific, because it's no Shakespeare. It's very different. When someone's quoting Shakespeare, you know.
Yeah.
Someone could be quoting Waiting for Godot at you and you would have no idea.
No. I appreciate you correcting the pronunciation. Oh. So I grew up saying Godot. And then
I think it's either. I think it's a personal preference.
I do too. And then kind of it seemed like in the aughts, Godot started coming back. And I realized I was wrong. So I used to work at the Drama Bookshop in New York. And one day I was sitting there at the information desk and I see this very tall gentleman walking up and I kind of clocked him. I was like, that kind of looks like Ian McKellen, but he's too tall. And then he came up and said, excuse me, could I have a copy of Waiting for Godot? And I was like, yes, sir. I was like, it's over there. And like very nervously walked over and like got the copy off the shelf and handed it to him.
Be cool.
And you know, he purchased this and went on his merry way. And then the next year he did it on Broadway with Patrick Stewart. And I was like, oh my gosh, like I gave Ian McKellen the copy of Waiting for Godot that he studied with for the...
That's fantastic. That's
awesome. And so after them, it's like, nah, it's Godot because Sir Ian says it. All hail Sir Ian.
That's right. I picked it up because I did a workshop with Andrew Wade at the Davenport Junior Theater. And Andrew Wade was a vocal coach, coach at Royal Shakespeare. And so he worked with Ian McKellen. That's where I picked it up. So, yeah.
I'm still
thank
trying
you for existing,
to get
Andrew
there.
Wade. You're being brilliant.
So, for anyone who has not come to Genesius Guild or has not seen Shakespeare or Greek theater before, or has only dryly read it in their 10th grade English class, why should they come see Taming of the Shrew or the Women's Festival?
The Women's Festival, because again, we're just having a good time. The whole point of that show is to end the year on a high note, having a good time, poke fun at ourselves, poke fun at the community, really enjoy it. Hopefully, the actors, oftentimes, Don Wooten's original thing all the time was, this isn't funny if you're putting it on. And his comedy is the most serious work you can possibly do.
Yeah.
And we will not have any fun while like, I hope I'm a little looser than that. And I hope the theater has come a little open. But yeah, come see the Women's Festival. It'll be about an hour or so. And it's fun night in the park and seeing people go crazy on the stage. And I think this is for all of them. Right, I think the comedy distills it in some unique way into, these actors are but that's what Taming of the Shrew is. It's an entertainment. And you get to see live people. And one thing that I always talk about, and I've worked a little bit with her voices and being a voice person all the time, is that oftentimes when you see, say, I always use Jurassic Park, you realize that the dinosaurs are not there. They're computer generated things. But oftentimes we listen to voices. We don't realize that the voices are all altered that we're hearing in a movie, or that 90% of the music we listen to, we're hearing a voice that's essentially as CGI as the dinosaurs in the film. And one thing that's great about Genesius Guild is you hear the voice of the actor. and you hear their voice. And you hear their voice unaltered.
Yeah.
And I can give, Kate knows, I can give an hour and a half on why that is so important. But the emotional connection that happens when you can hear an actor's real voice just can't be replicated anywhere else. And you will hear that even in things you don't understand. The emotion is first.
Yes,
the emotion is first. The humor, the fact that they're acting, you will get it. You will get something. I promise anyone who comes to the show, they will get something out of it. And they will be intrigued. And there'll be moments that will last with them throughout. And this is a unique thing. You aren't sitting at home having it fed to you on the TV, scrolling on your phone. It is there in front of you. And these are real people. And you get to see real people having some of the greatest times they may have in their life on stage in front of you, no matter what the material is. But if you let down that guard or you open up your eyes a little bit more, there's just nothing like theater. And of course, you know, I don't have to convince this group,
but it's not
people
at all.
Coming out. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I would say the thing that I want to say to people all the time, actually, is that Shakespeare is not what you encountered in school.
No.
I mean, not that that's not important.
Right.
And not that I've had some very good teachers who taught me Shakespeare in an English class in that setting. But it is not what those plays are. They're plays.
They're meant to be performed.
They're meant to be performed. Mm-hmm. And in performance, they take on a completely different life. And they're funny. And they're bawdy. And they're, like, you know, there are fart jokes. You know, I mean, it's not what you think it is. Yeah. It's not. If you think something, if you're reading Shakespeare and you think it might be a dirty joke, it is.
It's definitely
a dirty joke. Right? That's... So it gets presented the bard, you know, from up on high.
Yeah.
And he was a guy working in theater. Being in the theater was not something that nobles did.
No.
Right. You were pretty low on the social strata. He was trying to make a buck. Some of his plays are better than others. Some of them other people added to. Some of them you're like, oh yeah, Shakespeare wrote that. Sometimes he was a little bit of a hack. You know, he had to get shows out. I mean, it's all of that. And is it brilliant? Yes, it's still brilliant. It's still wonderful. Yeah. It's all of that. Oh, but it's just, you know, it was a guy trying to make a buck in the theater.
Yeah.
Come see his show.
Yeah.
Bring your inner eighth grader
and listen to every word of the body dirty joke.
If you think it has a double meaning, it does. It has two more as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's definitely a double meaning in that.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Well, thank you so much both for being here today. It's been so fun talking. I can't wait to see the shows. To refresh those dates, Taming of the Shrew runs through July 19th, and it's at 7 p.m. at Lincoln Park by the Augustana campus. And then the Women's Festival is July 25th, 26th, August 1st and 2nd, also at 7 p.m. All the shows are free. Come check out some great outdoor theater with these amazing local directors and the amazing local actors. So we hope you see you there. Kate and Michael, thank you so much for being my guests today.
Thank you.
Absolutely. Thanks again to Quad City Bank and Trust for their support, and to my man on the mix, Mr. Joshua Graves, for helping put all this together. For more information about Genesius Guild and the upcoming productions we talked about today, you can visit www.genesius.org. I'm Ben Gujan, and this was Talking Art.